97.5, The Fanatic.
Now we're going to talk to my man, Steve Callis, who I talk to all the time. Always has some good stories. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline right now. Steven, how are you, my friend?
All good, Joe. Great to be with you, as always.
You too. Along the lines of college basketball, because I don't know if you've been listening to the show. I watched Survive in Advance for like the 19th time today before I can't get enough of it. And you know how I feel about that 85 Nova team. As much as I have a connection to that team, I still think that the 83 run by Carolina State was almost more...
Incredible.
Yeah, they had nine straight elimination games. Seven they were behind with the last minute. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, but I'd also agree with the final play still being, in my opinion, Elijah Wan's inexperience as a basketball player.
Yeah,
as he watched the, I don't know, I guess that was a shot that turned into a pass by Wittenberg, but he literally was flat-footed and 8 or 10 feet from the basket, and that's why there was a layup on the other end, Lorenzo Charles. And, you know, I know he later said he was afraid of goaltending, but he wasn't even making an effort to jump. So I found it a fascinating kind of bang-bang play that would happen in a schoolyard, that if you had been playing in schoolyards your whole life, you would know what was happening. And he just didn't seem to know what was happening.
That's amazing, because if you look at it again, he was just standing there. Now, he said afterwards he didn't want to go touch it because he didn't want to take a chance of goaltending, but I really think he lost concentration there and really did nothing, and Lorenzo Charles made a heads-up play.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was concentration. I just think it was lack of basketball knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he was squatting down to get ready to jump and then said, oh, I'm not going to jump because I'm afraid it's going to be goaltending.
Right.
I mean, just watch it. He looks like, where am I going? And he's 8 feet from the basket. Why isn't he boxing out of Lorenzo Charles?
Right.
I mean, it made no sense. But I, at the time and to this day, just attributed it to a guy who, frankly, was a Nigerian soccer goalie. And I'm not knocking that. That made him one of the most efficient centers in the history of the NBA. I mean, when you talk about footwork on a center... all time, Olajuwon might be number one, but I'll say it again. He just didn't have the experience. He hadn't been playing that long. And when a bang, bang play goes bang, bang, sometimes you need more of a feel for a game than a talent for the game.
He is part of a trivia question on what two other players were taken before Michael Jordan. And it was Sam Bowie and Hakeem Olajuwon was taken before Jordan. You can hardly argue with the pick. It won Houston two world championships. You know, it wasn't exactly the... I mean, looking back on it, yeah, you missed on Michael Jordan, but you did get what you really were looking for in Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, and don't forget back then, Joe, you were, this was drafting, I'm going to draft the big man over the six guy.
Yep.
And that was a very common thing back then. And Bowie had been great at Kentucky, but then, you know, was ravaged with injuries his whole pro career. Actually wound up occasionally driving and owning harness horses in Lexington, Joe. Think of a 7-footer driving in a harness race. But that's what Sam Bowie wound up doing. I was just part of a side part of his life. But he was always ravaged by injuries in the pros. But I really think, and I'm not defending anybody, hey, you passed Michael Jordan, even to get Olajuwon. Mm-hmm. But again, back then you took, you know, we're going to talk about starting a team today, and there's some real issues now who you'd pick today. Because back then you picked the 7-footer over the 6'6 guy. That's pretty much the way it was.
Now, we're talking about that. It's a good transition. Because Kobe, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, they're going into the Hall of Fame. Two of them never played college ball, came right out of high school. I threw out the question, who do you start your team with? To me, I still think Wilt's the greatest player of all time. I'm fine. I'm comfortable starting Wilt. I know you might go in a different direction. Some people have said Michael Jordan. Hard to argue with that. I just like Wilt. They changed rules for him. He was so dominant when he wanted it to be. Who do you go with?
Yeah, but here's the question, Joe. Are you going to start with Wilt in today's game? If there's a 3-point line, are you picking a 7-footer? I mean, my son agrees with you. Wilt's the greatest player ever by far. As you know, I'm an Oscar guy, and I won't bore you with all the triple-double stuff, other than to say his first 5 years in the NBA, he averaged a triple-double. So if you're going to start giving me the...
Do you go with Oscar? Are you going with Oscar?
I think if I had to pick one guy today, I probably would. Because, again, the big man, you stick Wilt Chamberlain in today's game. He's dominant. He's great. He's awesome. But everyone's going to say, well, he can't shoot threes.
Right.
And that's the game today. So if you tell me it's the line. It's the game the way it was before the three-point line. Wilt probably is the pick. But if you're looking now in today's game, I don't think you pick a seven-footer. I don't think you pick Kareem. I don't think you pick guys like that. I don't even think you necessarily pick like a Bill Russell, because the game is so different now that the block shots are going to be disappearing because everybody's taking threes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a different analysis. You have to say, what's the court they're playing on? Are they playing on the modern-day court, or are they playing on the court without a three-point line? And I think that would make different selections. And then if it doesn't, I think there's just something wrong with your general knowledge of basketball.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, and you make a good point.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Now, let me ask you this, because we don't know when basketball is coming back. President Trump met with the commissioners of most of the leagues yesterday. And basically, I mean, nothing really came out of it except that he says, you know, he wants to start basketball pretty soon. I don't think that's realistic. Do you?
I don't think it's realistic. I think it's all part of this aspirational, let's try and make people feel good. You know, I'll say it again. It's incredible. 1,000 people a day are dying in this country, and somebody comes on every day and, oh, this is going to be over soon, and we're going to be okay, and we're going to come out stronger, and meanwhile, another 1,000 people die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just bizarre to me, the whole approach. I'm all for being positive, but there's being positive and there's fantasy. And the notion that, you know, there were going to be packed churches on Easter Sunday, I'm sorry, that was a fantasy. And in the states where you can do that, I'll say it again, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to get the coronavirus. They're just not going to know for 7, 14, 21 days after Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem, because we're all in the same boat together and nobody's going to be able to come out. There's not going to be any games if 10 states in the middle of the country have coronavirus outbreaks because it was okay because they didn't have to shelter in place, because that's all going to start a month from now. So I don't see how any of that's going to happen. I guess there's a chance for football, but I think originally whenever sport comes back and whenever they come back, how are they going to have people in the stands at the beginning? You're going to put 20,000 in an NBA arena?
Right. That's
my point.
You're going
to put 17,500 at a hockey game
that's
in an enclosed
point.
Area?
Yeah.
You're going to have 80,000 in an outdoor football game? I don't think so. So I think it's going to be a very slow return. I hope it comes back quickly, but my goodness, all of April, all of May, I'd be shocked if there's anything like that.
You have been a proponent for moving the NFL draft. We talked about it yesterday. I don't know where it would be moved to, because you also said that. You said, yeah, I'd like to move it, but I don't know where. I'm okay with where it is, but I think it's going to be a debacle the way it's going to be done, because no one's going to be allowed to be in a war room with another person, and they're going to be drafting remotely from home or from restaurants or from. How much of a debacle, logistical debacle, do you think it will be, or do you think they'll get it hammered out and straightened out by then?
Well, if you're putting yourself in the shoes of the GMs who are forbidden from criticizing Roger Goodell in the NFL, they got to be thinking, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to be able to get like a string of 10 hotel rooms maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And literally have 10 phones and 10 TVs and 10 ways to connect down the hallway in the big hotel? That strikes me as the only way it can possibly get done. And don't forget, these guys are correctly complaining we never got to interview these guys. We never got to sit in the room with them. You can interview someone on a TV or on a phone call, Joe. It's not quite the same as being in the room with them, seeing how they react immediately when you ask a question. You know, there's lots of things that are missing. So half the time, these guys are shooting in the dark anyway. You know, when you look at the history of the draft picks of various teams, we won't say which Eagles team, but when you look at their history, maybe they're better off being separated. You don't know.
Yes.
But I just think it's going to be a problem. And as you've mentioned many times, from state to state, this might be a different kind of thing. The rules in one state. So what about all those states in the middle of the country where they don't have to shelter in place? At least in theory, you can have 20 guys in your room.
But they said they will not do that. The NFL will not. If one state will not allow it, they're going to make that a blanket rule.
Well, and that's going to be a blanket rule. It's just going to hurt everybody. And I agree.
Exactly.
It should be like an equal footing. But now it's an equal negative footing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not remotely an equal positive footing. And again, to me, there's that overriding everyone by April 23rd, 4th, and 5th. I think you're going to have 1,500 people dying every day, maybe 2,000 people dying every day. Imagine if there was a war and they were putting this on TV every day, which is what they're doing. They're putting the death totals up every day. How is it we're going to be concerned? I'll use New York as the best example because they're in the most trouble right now. Might be different 2 weeks from now. I don't know. But the Jets and the Giants select whoever, and somebody cares. 1,000 New Yorkers died today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't quite get it, other than to say the NFL will have their monopoly on those 3 days, and it's all about the almighty dollar, and they'll tell you they're doing it for the fans. But the reality is they just want that monopoly from free agency with Tom Brady all the way through April 25th. And frankly, Joe, that's what they're going to get.
They're going to get it. You're totally right, Steve. Hey, great stuff. Appreciate you coming on as usual, my friend. Keep that Oscar Robertson, that propaganda going. I love it. I love it, man. Hey, great talking to you, Steve, and we'll catch up with you soon, pal.
Always a pleasure, big fella.
You too, Steve. Thanks, man. Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline.